held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Funeral. It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. Suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that brand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I have a sensational guest today. He's a former intelligence officer for the CIA, in my opinion, one of the world's experts on the Middle East, especially Israel. He's multilingual, speaks German, Italian, Spanish, and Turkish, as well as English. Like myself, he is a Holocaust denier, for which he has been pilloried, and he has said, quote, "Those American Jews who lack any shred of integrity when they appear on television should be labeled like a warning label on a bottle of rat poison." Phil Giraldi, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to The Raw Deal.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And of course, as you know well, the American media is completely dominated by dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, another panel of 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, another panel of 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S. citizen. Hardly surprising that the press not only suppressed all the Hunter Biden information that would have totally discredited Joe Biden as a candidate and trashed Donald Trump for really ridiculous reasons, but now during the press conference, they asked only softball questions, even to the most egregious gaffe, and it turns out, Phil, the Biden spokesperson, Jen Psaki, worked for an Israeli spy firm. I mean, this is just outrageous, in my opinion. It appears that now not only does AIPAC control our Congress, but Israel, the Zionists, control the White House as well.
Yeah, and I think you could go farther than that. You have to look at the appointments in the White House. Secretary of State, for example, also has Israeli connections. And we've just come off of a previous presidency with Donald Trump, where Jews were pretty much Jews with Israeli connections. Make that point. we're pretty much in charge of large sectors of U.S. policy.
My opinion, though, Phil, is that they wanted Biden over Trump because Biden, although he was so very generous toward Israel, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, declaring the Golan Heights to be Israeli territory, defunding the UN agency assisting Palestinian refugees, even most outrageously, in my opinion, redefining anti-Semitism by executive order in order to qualify any criticism of the government and actions of Israel as anti-Semitic, just a blatant violation of our First Amendment rights, that he refused to bomb Iran. And I believe that this is the Israeli agenda to manipulate the Biden administration into bombing Iran. Trump, of all our recent presidents, is the only one who kept us out of wars. He was also drawing us out of the Middle East, removing us from Afghanistan, getting us out of Syria. All that, of course, has been on hold or reversed by Biden. But I think he is so weak, he is so feeble, that the Israelis are very confident that they can get the U.S. military to perform their dirty work in the Middle East in relation to Iran, just as they got the U.S. to perform their dirty work in the Middle East by taking out all the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to their domination of the entire region after 9/11, which, as you well know, was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, almost all of whom were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens and the Mossad.
Well, I agree with a number of your points. Some I don't. But the fact is that Israel, the Israel-U.S. relationship is supported bipartisanly. I don't think any of us would disagree with that. I would kind of go along with you that the Israelis preferred the choice of Biden because Trump is kind of unpredictable. And Biden is, as we have seen in the recent press conference and everything else that's happened in the last 2 months, Biden is very controllable. He's very manageable. And he's having very definitely, clearly having his strings pulled by others in the administration and in the DNC, and we don't even know who they are. And so I quite agree. If you had a choice of a president that you could manipulate and manage, Joe Biden's your man.
Well, tell me more, Phil, about where you take exception to anything I just said there, because I'd be very, very interested in the reasons why we might have a disagreement on those issues, which my research suggests are very well-founded. Please, give me a critique.
Well, as an insider who was involved with the CIA Counterterrorism Center, and I personally had worked with and knew virtually all the people in it, I am completely convinced that Israel, at a minimum, knew and probably expedited 9/11, but I am not convinced that there was anyone in the U.S. government who actually had a role in it. Now, I'll qualify that. I do believe there is plenty of evidence that the United States government and its various law enforcement and intelligence organizations had all the pieces in place, but they didn't manage to pull it together. And that's basically where I come down to. I have, as I say, I knew all the people who would have had to be involved if CIA were involved in 9/11. And I can't believe it. I don't believe it.
Well, that's, to me, somewhat surprising. I fully respect your opinion. I mean, the actions taken that day were egregious. Building 7, which architects and engineers have talked about endlessly, which came down 7 hours after the destruction of the North Tower, was a classic controlled demolition. The North and the South Tower were blown apart from the top down, requiring massive sources of explosion. They remained stationary until they were converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, which is among the signatures of the use of nuclear devices. All four of the aircraft crash sites, the 9/11 crash sites, were fabricated or faked, all four of them. two of the planes weren't even in the air. Flight 11, North Tower, or Flight 77, the Pentagon, were not even in the air. Pilots for 9/11 tracked Flight 93 and discovered that it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it officially crashed in Shanksville. They also tracked Flight 175 and discovered it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, after it had allegedly hit the South Tower. I myself obtained FAA registration records showing that the planes used for those two flights were not even taken out of service or formally deregistered until 28 September 2005. So how can planes that were not even in the air have crashed on 9/11? How can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? And if I can figure it out, how could not the CIA and the American government? It appears that, in fact, Dick Cheney was running the whole operation from a bunker underneath the White House, Phil. You must know most, if not all, of this.
Do you want me to respond to that?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, I don't disagree with anything you said, but what I said was that I don't see the connection with the people I knew who were in the key positions in the CIA. Now, there are a lot of parts of the federal government that are not the CIA, and I think this game of when in doubt, name the CIA is a kind of a false assumption on the part of the people that are making it. I'm aware of most of the information that you just came out with, and it's accurate as far as I'm concerned. But that does not mean that you've connected the dots. I'm sorry, it does not mean that. And I think the best connection of dots is with the Israelis. The Israelis were running a massive spy operation. They clearly had prior knowledge that the buildings were going to go down. They were well placed to put the explosives in the building because they had the guy who was the landlord of the building in their pocket. So, you know, I would say the problem was 9/11 was an Israeli operation. And because it was an Israeli operation, the U.S. media is never going to go after that story. And the U.S. government is never going to go after that story.
Now, let me see. Let me get this straight. The Larry Silverstein, we know, took possession just 6 weeks before. He fired the firm that had been providing security since it was originally opened in 1970, hired an Israeli firm, redid his insurance contract so he could have an anti-terrorist clause. When there were supposed to be two plane attacks, he claimed double indemnity, pocketed over $4.5 billion on a $114 million investment. The members of the Port Authority in New York who made this transfer were all prominent Zionists in the United States. We know the FBI played a role here with a convenient list of 19 of his co-conspirators that Mohammed Atta allegedly left behind in a suitcase in Boston. This is so completely ridiculous. After a half a dozen of these guys turned up alive and well the following day and made contact with the British press, the FBI refused and has never changed its list of the 19 conspirators, even though, given there were no plane crashes, there were no Islamic terrorists to cause the planes to crash. And moreover, since the planes didn't crash, there were no passengers aboard the plane that died in crashes that did not occur, which means the whole war on terror is a complete fabrication. And if the CIA knows this and wasn't involved, Phil, why the hell haven't they explained all this to the American people? We deserve to know.
Well, I can't answer that one. All I can say that from my perspective, having been an insider in the organization and having contacts in the organization, I don't believe the CIA was actively participating in 9/11. I do believe the Israelis were participating in 9/11, and I do accept that there probably were all kinds of cover-ups all across the government to conceal that fact. And, it's kind of like this. I mean, each of us kind of knows certain things that we have specific knowledge of, that we have specific insights in, and we all have a different view on all how this plays out. What I really can't stand about the 9/11 truthers is the fact that they have this blueprint all laid out, and everybody has to agree with it 100% or you're written out of the script. And I think that's unacceptable.
Well, so do I, and I'm the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth back in 2005. I brought together experts from all over the world. We had, maybe 600 or 800 members in 4 different categories by the end of 2006. I've been flown around the world to give lectures on 9/11. And it's really inconceivable to me that if the agency were not involved, that it hasn't exposed the true culprits. And you'd have to agree the CIA has done not a damn thing to expose what really happened on 9/11, which makes the CIA accessories after the fact.
Okay, that could be. I have no evidence to sustain that. I have no evidence to sustain that. And you don't have any evidence to sustain it either.
What do you mean? That the CIA has not identified who actually perpetrated 9/11? I have no evidence. That's a matter of record. What we have is a Phil, what we have is a completely phony whitewash known as the 9/11 Commission Report. Philip Zelikow, who is the executive director, authored that. He appears to even have written a script for 9/11. His position in the academy before he entered government was as a faculty member, the creation and maintenance of public myths, M-Y-T-H-S. Now, I cannot imagine an international event where the CIA has responsibility or a greater obligation it would have to the American people than informing them the truth about 9/11. And this has got nothing to do with getting everything right or wrong. This has nothing to do with some script you would attribute to those you refer to 9/11 truthers who have at least a dedication of finding out what the hell happened with the government hasn't told us, and neither has the CIA.
I think we should change the subject.
Well, Phil, does the CIA have an obligation to inform the American people of matters within its areas of expertise?
I'm not the CIA, so you're asking the wrong person.
Yeah,
I'm just saying from what I have seen, what I have learned, what I have heard, I am not convinced of some aspects that are being claimed about 9/11. I see a conspiracy, but I see a conspiracy that mostly involved Israel.
And how about the Bush-Cheney administration and the theft of the election in Florida in 2000 in order to bring us 9/11? Do you see that as clearly paving the way for 9/11? I'm certainly convinced the whole reason they had to get into office was to bring us 9/11, just as the reason now we got, Hillary wanted to get in, but Trump beat her by surprise, even though that election was rigged. And they had to get Trump out because he was defeating the Zionist agenda. That's my global take on the situation. Any thoughts of yours would be most welcome.
Well, my thoughts of saying that Trump was a person who was a problem for the Zionist plan flies in the face of the fact that the Trump did more for Israel than anybody since Ronald Reagan. And my objection to Donald Trump, primarily, although I voted for him twice, is based on the fact that he was Israel's useful boy, and they didn't trust him because he was erratic and he had a tendency to go off target. But the fact is that Trump was no prize when it came to Israel, and Biden was no prize, Obama was no prize, George W. Bush, the only one who stood up to Israel was George H. W. Bush, and he was the last one able to do it. We have a government that essentially has recognized the fact that American Jews have enormous power over the political system, over the financial system in this country, over the media, over the news services, and nobody messes with it because they know they'll get stung. And Trump is no different than any of them.
Well, it seems to me when you have if he was such a bitch of Israel, why did the media, which is dominated by the Zionists, turn on him? Why did they prefer Biden over Trump? Because according to your account, he was doing them great service. They would have been better served by him. He's at least a competent, cognitively competent individual whereas Biden is at such a loss, he's turned the American government into an international joke. I cannot see that Israel's interests are promoted by an international joke than it would be by a competent president who, by your account, is promoting the interests of Israel.
The Zionists preferred Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. They prefer Biden to Donald Trump. But that's because these are people that are so positioned in the Democratic Party that they are easily controlled and easily manipulated. It's a, you know, it's a choice between one, from the point of view of the American voters like myself, who are concerned about our policies being controlled by Israel. It's a bad choice either way, and unfortunately, these last elections have been bad choices. And of course, if I'm waiting for a presidential candidate who will really pursue a hard line with Israel, I'll be waiting for the rest of my life, I suspect.
Yes, you agree, of course. The dominance of Congress, of AIPAC, is unprecedented. I had a friend who recently asked that I know how many members of the current Congress had not signed the pledge, which Cynthia McKinney revealed around 2011 on Press TV that candidates for the Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And if they refuse to sign the pledge, their financial support simply dries up. She said it on Press TV, but told me subsequently at the time she thought everybody knew. She didn't realize she was making news. So a friend of mine recently asked of how many members of the then Congress, this would have been a couple of years ago, had not signed the pledge. And when I said no, I acknowledged I did not know. He held up one finger of one hand. Phil, only one member of the then present Congress had not signed the pledge. So what the hell has happened to the integrity of the United States when the Congress places a higher premium on the interests of Israel than of the United States?
Well, you know what's happened to it. I mean, we've become a republic that's about to go down the toilet. We are letting foreign interests, and particularly Israeli interests, dominate our foreign policy. And the other thing, I know your sources are completely accurate. As soon as someone declares that they're even running for Congress, I mean, there might be a field of five Democrats, five Republicans. They are immediately approached by people from AIPAC, and the people from AIPAC insist that they, in most cases, that they sign a pledge that they will do certain things on behalf of Israel. And this is automatic. It happens to everyone who's even on the playing field. It's not necessarily even the candidate. And I would also add that this penetration by Israeli agents, because that's what they are. These people are agents of a foreign power, even if they claim to be American citizens. This takes place at the local level and state level, too. And it's increasingly at these levels because Israel, as is the case now in Florida and in Virginia that I know of, has very special trade arrangements with these states. And these trade arrangements are always very beneficial to Israeli businesses and other private interests. And in the state of Virginia where I live, for example, the state of Virginia runs a $500 million deficit with Israel in various ways.
Wow, a $500 million deficit. What the hell does that do to the Virginia budget then, Phil? I mean, how can they cope with this?
Well, what they do is it's all kinds of co-production deals where the Israelis will come in, and there's a big controversy going on in South Virginia right now where they're setting up a geothermal solar energy type plant, which is being subsidized by the state of Virginia. In other words, that money, I think it's $180 million, goes straight into the pocket of the Israeli developers. And then, of course, the Israelis own and operate the facility. So it's an ongoing source of income. And there's more and more and more of this stuff going on. A friend of mine who's still in Congress told me that virtually every big bill like the current bill that went through on the coronavirus, has all kinds of little sweeteners for Israel in it, but they're very hard to find.
That's quite fascinating indeed. I'm very interested in exploring a subject on which you published, to wit, what we can do about Israel. It seems to me that may be the major foreign policy issue confronting the United States. Would you agree of its supreme importance here? Because it affects everything else we do. Trump started out wanting to improve relations with Russia, which was obviously a good idea. He wanted to minimize our involvement in the Middle East, another good idea. Israel didn't like it, and look how he's been sabotaged. How much of that would you attribute to the influence of Israel on our political process?
Oh, I would put close to 100%. You know, the problem with this is that, you know, we talk about Israel's influence, but Israel's influence is manifested through Americans, as you cited before, in many cases, dual nationals. So these people look like they're American businessmen, or they look like they're American entrepreneurs, but in reality, they're working for Israeli interests. And I think that just as in foreign policy, which is maybe something we'll talk about more later, the Israeli interests are not the American interests. And there's this fraud going on that we basically are joined at the hip, and we're both doing things that benefit us mutually. Well, of course, that's not the case. These things always seem to benefit Israel and do not benefit the U.S.
Yes, yes, yes. I want to spend the next segment talking about what can be done about this. And also to ask a dangler about 9/11, to wit, all the evidence I have indicate that Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan. We'll return to that, Phil, right after this break. I'm so glad you could join me today. We'll be right back.
Right.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, where I'm very pleased to have as my guest today a man with an 18-year stint with the CIA involved in counterterrorism efforts. He certainly has vast experience. He's one of our nation's leading experts on the Middle East, and I'm just delighted to have him here today. Phil, I left a dangler at the end, given the break coming up, about Osama bin Laden, where I'd be fascinated with your confirmation or not of the results of my collaborative research on him and his role in 9/11. I deal with so many controversial, complex subjects that I make a point of having collaborators on virtually every issue I investigate to ensure I don't make a mistake. By having collaborators, we don't guarantee it doesn't happen, but we reduce the probability. Now, based upon my research, it appears that Osama bin Laden was Arban in Afghanistan, that he was instrumental in getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen that they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes to drive them out, that he actually was an officer in the CIA, Colonel Tim Osmond by name, where an official of the agency actually visited him in a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death in Afghanistan on 15 December 2001 from his medical maladies. It's tough to get dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan. There were local obituaries. Two networks, both CNN and Fox News, reported his death on the 26th of December. David Ray Griffin has even published a book about it, Osama bin Laden Dead or Alive. How much of what I just recounted would you confirm or deny?
Well, all of the early bits are correct. He was indeed a CIA, we refer to it as an agent or a source, during the fighting against the Russians in Afghanistan. He was on the payroll. He was given some honorifics. I didn't know he had been promoted to colonel, but yeah, that's all very correct. I personally don't have, let me qualify this. I have no direct knowledge of where he went from there. I know that people that I knew intimately that worked in the counterterrorism center were not still meeting him. But I presume that people were meeting him. And I would suspect in this case, during my time in Turkey, I handled some very sensitive operations, and I discovered that the really sensitive operations being run by the U.S. government at that time were run by the National Security Council out of the White House. And so I suspect if contact with bin Laden continued, that's probably how it was handled. I, like your other sources, am highly skeptical about the narrative of how he allegedly died. But I don't have any specific information. I think the information you presented is pretty much what I've heard and I've seen too. And while I'm agnostic about most sources, I suspect in this case there certainly is a good deal of truth to what you're suggesting.
Well, I was at the time chairman of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. We were issuing press conferences, doing studies, and all the videos and tape recordings attributed to Osama after the date of 15 December 2001 were fakes. They had these fake Osamas. Some didn't look remotely like him. I had the best expert on Osama from Duke University among my consults. We were all in agreement. Nick Kohlerstrom, PhD, historian of science from the UK, who's a brilliant student of false flags and so forth, including his expertise on the 7/7 London subway bombing, where he blew the official narrative apart by observing that the train from Luton, that the young lads who were going to be accused of responsibility, who'd apparently been lured into participating on a drill at the very tube stops where the subway trains were blown up, because the train was canceled, couldn't even be on the scene. So they went to Canary Wharf to try to inform the international media what was going on, and the bobbies shot them down dead. Nick has done a brilliant piece on Osama bin Laden, 1952 to 2001. You can find on my blog at jamesfetzer.org, where you can see any number of the photographs. Now, if we assume that all of that is true, given that Osama was being blamed for 9/11, oughtn't it to have been appropriate for the CIA to let it leak, to get the information out that actually he was working for the United States and that the public was being played? Because if it wasn't being played by the CIA when it knew better, then, you know, what was going on? I just welcome your addressing this. And, of course, when you mention about how he allegedly died, you're talking about the raid on the compound in Pakistan a decade later, where Barack Obama found it politically expedient to resurrect Osama to have him die a second time, where in order to position himself for a triumphal re-election, by having taken out the most wanted man in the world. Phil, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I agree with what you're saying. And if the CIA had, and again, I don't know what the CIA had, but if the CIA had information relating to 9/11, it would be, I think, in the interests of the United States government, if it ever wanted to be seen again as an honest interlocutor on any issue, to make that public. And it has not been made public. They have not, and you made a comment before about the 9/11 report. Well, the 9/11 report is probably the worst compilation of garbage I've ever seen in my life. And that was the official U.S. government response to 9/11. And so, yeah, I agree with you. But we're in a situation now where truth or inquiry even, or whistleblowers and people like that who are revealing some aspects of what the government is up to have become the enemy. I don't know what the solution to that is.
Phil, you have a lot of thoughts about what we ought to do about Israel to lessen its control over America. I mean, you know, after 9/11, Ariel Sharon declared, his advisors told him not to do it, but he went ahead and said it anyway. We own America, and the Americans know it. Bibi Netanyahu in 2000 told others that America is the golden calf and we're going to suck it dry and destroy it, turn it into the world's greatest welfare state, because that's what we do with nations we hate. I'm certain you're familiar with extreme Zionist attitudes about the superiority of the Jewish race to all the other human races who only exist to serve the Jews. Not that this is a position held by all Jews, but it's certainly a virulent form of Zionism with Talmudic roots. That seems to me to be one of the most extreme forms of racism, maybe the most extreme ever to be manifest in world history. I'm very interested in, your thoughts about what you published. And let me mention for my audience, if you go to jamesfetzer.org, you'll find on March 7th, I published Phil Giraldi, What to Do About Israel, so you can follow up. I mean, this is one of many reasons I hold Phil in such high esteem. Your thoughts, Phil, please elaborate.
Well, thank you for that comment. I sat down and at one point because, I've been writing on the issue of Israeli influence over the United States and all the bad things that it's done for the American people for quite some time. And occasionally I would get a comment from a supporter who would say, yeah, but what are we going to do about it? So I wrote a couple of articles in which I suggested some things that can be done. The biggest vulnerability, the biggest asset Israel and their supporters have is money. And so you go after what is giving them their power. And I said, you identify the oligarchs, the Jewish oligarchs in the United States, billionaires, who are the supporters of Israeli settlements, supporters of AIPAC and AIPAC's control of the U.S. Congress. All this money comes from somewhere, and it comes from these Jewish oligarchs. There is always the counter argument that, oh, well, the strongest force for supporting Israel is the Christian Zionists. Well, Christian Zionists are numerous, and they give bulk to the Israel, pro-Israel movement. But the real power is the money and the control over Congress and the access to our government, which has been manifest for years now. So I said, let's start identifying who these oligarchs are, identify the businesses they represent, and don't patronize those businesses anymore. And in fact, write to their boards of directors and tell them that you are not going to patronize, you give up your credit card or whatever with them, and say you are not going to buy for these very specific reasons, what Israel is doing to the United States. And so you go after money. Congress, for example, is totally controlled Israeli territory, as Pat Buchanan put it back in the 1990s. And but I know congressmen. I speak with congressmen, and when they speak with me privately, they are very aware of what's going on and what cowards they are, essentially, for not being able to oppose it. And in a congressional office, if a constituent and other constituents and more constituents start writing letters to that congressman, they start to pay attention. I'm not telling you they're going to necessarily turn around and say bad things about Israel. Cynthia McKinney did that. Look what happened. So that's one thing you do. Another thing is the media. Media totally controlled, totally, in many cases, owned by American Jewish billionaires who are close to Israel. If you start writing to the New York Times a letter and your friend does the same and another friend does the same and another friend does the same, it has an impact. Eventually, they start thinking, well, maybe we better pay attention to this issue. And indeed, there has in the mainstream media been some shifting on the issue of Israel when Israel started committing these mass atrocities, human rights violations against the Gazans and against the West Bank Palestinians. So these things do kind of have an effect after time. So you look at ways not to contribute to their, give them money. Look at ways to write letters to the editor. Some of them will appear. you look to get in touch with your congressman. Your congressman very often will even respond. So, you know, there are a lot of pressure points in the relationship, and this is what I'm urging people to do. Let's push, 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 and let's keep this issue on a hot burner, and let's keep doing it.
Phil, that's all very, very valuable. Among the many reasons I hold you in high esteem has been many of your past exposés. For example, while Wikipedia is a political operation, while Wikipedia gutted my entry, which had extensive detailed information about my collaborative research on JFK, 9/11, Paul Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, and even the Holocaust, after I organized and participated in a conference on academic freedom, Are There Limits to Inquiry, using JFK, 9/11, and the Holocaust as examples, they gutted my entry. I mean, it was ridiculous. Looking at yours here, it seems to me, you would know better, but that a lot of it looks pretty accurate. In particular, I'm looking at the part about political commentary that in August of 2005, you wrote an article for the American Conservative outlining your knowledge of a contingency plan under development by the then Bush-Cheney administration involving a potential nuclear attack on Iran. In another article that same year, you suggested the outing of CIA officer Valerie Plame because of her husband Joe Wilson's exposing that there wasn't actually an attempt to acquire yellowcake from Niger, was part of a larger conspiracy to cover up the forgery of documents used to implicate Iraq in the attempted acquisition of nuclear material. The documents were a crucial component of the Bush administration case to go to war with Iraq. In 2013, you wrote an American Conservative article outlining the theory that the Syrian gas attacks in Damascus were staged by Middle Eastern actors outside of Syria in an attempt to frame the Assad regime in order to incite increased opposition to the Syrian war efforts. I agree with all of that 100%. Those gas attacks were a ridiculous, phony fake. We even have video where they have these Syrian crisis actors rushing to the scene and lying down for taking the footage. And then after they get the footage they want, they get up, dust themselves off, and walk away. Russia put together a dossier showing that it was not the Syrian government that was gassing, but it appears to be the Israelis in complicit. I have heretofore supposed, and you can correct me on this, that the CIA might have had a hand in that too. I'd be delighted if it were not the case, but we certainly know the other issues, the other points you're making here, which I conclude are spot on, absolutely 100% correct, would be invaluable knowledge for the American people to get a better grip on the recent history of U.S. foreign policy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, again, thank you for your praise on that. And I am not going to exonerate the CIA on what's going on in Syria and Iran and places like that. They are very much active players. I mean, this is the CIA role, overseas interference, you know, that sort of thing. The interesting thing about what's going on in the U.S. government is that a lot of these roles are being taken over by other government entities and are being exercised out in the open. Like, for example, if we look at, we go back to what happened recently in Ukraine, where the United States government spent $5 billion in bringing about regime change to get a duly elected but basically harmless, slightly pro-Russian government removed, and they replaced it with someone who was much more strongly tied to the United States and the West. This was regime change. This was done by Victoria Nuland, a noted neocon, who basically worked for the State Department. And she and John McCain would show up in the main square there in Kiev and share cookies with the demonstrators. And behind the scenes, of course, they were passing out money. So this stuff is done out in the open now in a lot of ways. The pressure we've seen put on Iran by the last four administrations since George Bush basically is being done openly. It's using sanctions that come from the Treasury Department. It's using ways to cut back on how the Iranian government and the Syrian government pay their bills, or how they buy things, how they do things. All these countries are going through crises now because they can't import medications and foodstuffs anymore because the U.S. has them so completely shut down, and we're doing the same in Venezuela. So, you know, when people think of secret America, yeah, it's there. And there are certain sneaky things that organizations like CIA will be doing in places like Iran and Syria right now. That's going on, no question about it. But the fact is, the U.S. government very often acts openly to do things which you and I, if we sat down and discussed them, we would say, well, this is stupid. Why are we doing this? This serves no U.S. national interest, and we're playing a game that we're only going to wind up losing in, just like we've been losing in Afghanistan for the past 20 years.
Let me ask another assessment here of what I and my collaborators have pieced together with regard to the creation of ISIS, which appears to have been a decision made by John Brennan, then the director of the CIA, in collaboration with Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, and with the approval of Barack Obama, then President of the United States, to create a terrorist army in the Middle East to put pressure on the Assad regime government, democratically elected. Most Americans think we're in Syria to promote democracy when Syria is already a democracy, and where Bashar al-Assad enjoys the support of over 80% of the Syrian people, and eventually to turn it to put pressure on Iran, where Mike Flynn, who was then the director of national intelligence, was strongly opposed. And as a consequence, Brennan suggested to Obama Flynn ought to be fired, which promptly happened. Now, that seems to me to be a rather clear case. I regard it as virtually common knowledge. But I'd like your assessment of whether that depiction of the creation of ISIS corresponds to your knowledge, where, of course, John McCain was deeply in the thick of it. Where we even have photographs of McCain with al-Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, and where they were raping and looting and pillaging and murdering throughout the Middle East with the assistance of Israel, even providing medical support and no doubt financing from Saudi Arabia as well. Your thoughts, any of the above?
No, I think your assessment, your description of it is accurate. I think ISIS was the genie that got out of the bottle, shall we say. They had this brilliant idea that they were going to create this, what we would call a terrorist group, what they would call a liberation army, I guess. They were going to use this to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. It got away from them. The Israelis, interestingly enough, managed to maintain pretty good connections with them. As you pointed out, these people were getting treated in Israeli hospitals when they were wounded and that sort of thing. So it's again the game of are my enemy's enemies, and they sometimes get too clever at this. They do this out in the open. Bremen was basically opportunist. He was disliked at the agency. He was pushed along by people like Obama. Let's not forget the Tuesday morning meetings between Bremen and Obama, in which they would compile death lists of American citizens who were overseas, who they put on the list, and they were these people were eligible to be executed by drone if their whereabouts were discerned. So it's there's a lot of this kind of nonsense going on in the last, particularly in the last 20 years in the United States. To me, the interesting aspect, like I mentioned before, and like was implicit in what you said, this stuff has kind of come out in the open. And yet we have a major party, the Democrats, who are more focused on looking for what they prefer to regard as supremacists, than to be looking at these horrific things that the United States is responsible for overseas.
Excellent. Let me follow up with the following, whether you're in a position to confirm or not. I've long since concluded Brennan is actually a Muslim, that Obama is almost certainly a Muslim, that Obama was actually born in Kenya. I've tracked down two different Kenyan death certificates. Everyone knows the Hawaiian is a complete fake, a fabrication, multiple layers of photoshopping there, and where, you know, he was nevertheless certified by prominent members of the Democratic Party as eligible to run for president. But it appears to me he was not qualified. And it also appears that he's pulling the strings behind the Biden administration, where he himself conceded not that long ago, when asked if he'd like to serve a third term, he said no. But if he were behind the scenes, you know, flipping the levers and pushing the buttons in his sweat, sitting in his basement, that'd be okay with him. I suspect we're in that scenario today. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it has been alleged that Brennan did convert, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that. And also, of course, Brennan, in his college days, was a communist. He was a member of the Communist Party. So this is an odd guy to wind up as a national security advisor to a Democratic president. As far as Obama goes, basically, he's kind of similar. He has his funny background. He attended Muslim schools when he lived in Indonesia. His father is a Kenyan. I believe these people are basically amoral opportunists. And the fact that they're amoral and opportunists is how they get where they are. And this has been a tragedy in our system.
We're about to hit the break, but you're welcome to call in with questions for Phil Giraldi and me. The number 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. I say this is a very honest man, sincerely interested in the United States. He's a truth teller. He's utterly sincere. This is a wonderful opportunity to discuss real issues with a guy who's speaking the truth as he knows it. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host, where I have someone I greatly admire, even if we have some divergence of opinion here and there, Phil Giraldi. This is a wonderful opportunity to ask him questions. I repeat the number, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Phil may or may not be able to stay after the next break. So if you want to speak to Phil, now would be a good time to do it. Meanwhile, we have a first caller, Bruce from Texas. Bruce, join the conversation with Phil Giraldi and me.
Hello, Dr. Fetzer. It's been a long time. And hello to your esteemed guest, Mr. Giraldi.
Bruce, we're
glad
to have you
here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I have two or three quick questions. First of all, are you familiar with Susan Lindauer in her episode?
Susan Lindauer?
Yeah.
We both know, and I know Susan fairly well because I've been on her show many times, and of course, Phil knows her. Go ahead. Go ahead about Susan.
Yeah, well, she gave a talk or a presentation sometime around 10 years ago, where she stated that her CIA handler advised her to stay away from New York City due to a nuclear event on around 9/11. So I think she's a fairly reputable source, fairly honest. So that is, and also the fact that the Mossad agents that were captured in the aftermath were released by the FBI tells me that the CIA had foreknowledge of the event.
Well, Phil, do you want to handle that? Susan, of course, was a liaison to Saddam Hussein, and she was told, as I recall, Phil, that Saddam was so eager to avoid war with the United States, he offered to buy 10 million cars a year for the next, or a million cars a year for the next 10 years, and if that weren't enough, make it 20, but that her handlers had no interest there. They wanted to proceed, and we're talking about, you know, George H.W. Bush in the first round, Colin Powell and the like. Phil, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Susan Lindauer is certainly a very reliable source. I've been also been on her show. I trust what she has to say. Now, you know, this whole issue of, you know, what CIA knows or what CIA should be talking about and everything like that. You know, all these issues depend on where you're sitting, or as we used to say, which side of the fence you're looking over from. And everybody has a kind of window of contacts that they have, relationships they have, and this is how we learn things. There are certain things that that I tend to know because I knew people in the counterterrorism area, which is where I worked for 18 years. And but you know, other issues like what was going on with National Security Council, National Security Agency, all these what they call alphabet soups of the intelligence and national security community kind of get together. Everybody is reading the same stuff and everybody gets a piece of the pie. So it's awfully hard to pin down, you know, who did this, who did that, and what are the results and where should we go with this? But I think Susan, if Susan said something, I would go with it.
She has shown a reluctance to open-mindedness about other events, false flags here in the U.S., Phil, such as Sandy Hook, where I have done massive evidence. She still seems to believe the official narrative, I think so, still about Parkland and other events where I published books, again, bringing together groups of experts to sort out what really happened. So I would simply say, you know, Susan's, I think, really good on the stuff of her direct personal experience and so forth, but still is a bit gun-shy when it comes to some of the false flags and conspiracies. Hardly unique. For example, I'm a huge fan of Tucker Carlson, but he's extremely naive when it comes to conspiracies and false flags. He actually... You know, I think he may even still think Lee Harvey Oswald shot JFK, or that 19 Islamic terrorists took out, you know, the World Trade Center on 9/11. He recently did programs about censorship and talking about Dr. Seuss, who had six of his books censored, where I, having had six of my books censored by Amazon, books on Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville and Parkland, even the Moon book, even though that appears to have been because there are chapters there about the disputing the official narrative of World War II with regard to the Holocaust. So I wrote to Tucker saying, you know, I may hold the indoor record for books having been banned. No response whatsoever. I think Tucker just doesn't want to go there.
Can I address Tucker?
Say again?
I said, I just want to say, Tucker Carlson, I mean, he works for Fox News Channel, and as I'm sure you're aware, and most of our listeners, there was a kind of a split in Fox News Channel right after, in the wake of 9/11. You had Rick Leventhal on the ground talking with Harley guy, Mr. Walsh, who laid out the entire narrative of how the buildings fell, I mean, immediately afterwards, and it was obviously staged and rehearsed. And so you have Rick Leventhal, and he's a longtime fixture. In my opinion, he's a scientist in Fox News Channel, and that goes way above him too, as I'm sure. And then you had the four-part series on Mossad and 9/11 and other issues that was taken off the Fox News server. Now, that tells me that the Zionists won in that internal battle at Fox News Channel. So he wouldn't be on the air if he didn't toe the line any of those issues you just addressed.
Yeah. Well, the Harley guy was such an obvious plant, given his theory that, oh, the intense fire from the jet fuel will cause the steel to melt, and then with the collapsing floors. I mean, it was absurd. It's not even physically possible. The highest temperature you could achieve with jet fuel, which is principally kerosene, is 1,000 degrees too low to affect the melting point of steel. I mean, that was all really ridiculous. not only that, but of course, before the North Tower had been blown apart, they constantly describe it as collapse, but we're not witnessing collapses of any kind, but the effect of massive sources of energy blowing the buildings apart in every direction. They had a report that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine had claimed responsibility. It was ridiculous. And then they show, and I'm sure Phil's well aware of this, they showed footage of Palestinians rejoicing as though it were simultaneous. They just happened to have at their fingertips, of course, it was archival footage from an earlier religious or political event where the Palestinians had a reason to rejoice. But the propaganda, that's a real sign of, you know, Israel's domination. They tend to overdo it just a tad. Phil, your thoughts?
Yeah, my time in CIA, I was a case officer, which was basically someone who handles recruits agents and that sort of thing. And I always worked in counterterrorism. My kind of headset on all of this stuff is that when I read an article or when I look at it something or read a book, I'm always interested in first person evidence, people who are actually there, who are on the spot, saw this and said this and so on and so forth. I always kind of look for that. I always find a lot of these other stories kind of come up afterwards. And particularly when you talk about the 9/11 story, it was pretty clear from the beginning to insiders that Israel had a big hand in this. And that was at a minimum. And the fact is that story kind of disappeared. It was taken away from the media. You didn't hear any government officials talking about it. And to me, that as soon as you get into a cover-up, that tells you everything to a certain extent that you need to know, that this at least was an element in what was going on. But the government will never tell us this. The media will never tell us this.
Right. I'd like to add in one more thing before I go, because I do need to go. John Brennan, I knew that he had converted to Islam and I knew about his history in the Democratic Party, but I did not know that he was a member of the Communist Party in college. Now, I was in the military and human reconnaissance, on the ground recon, you know, intelligence gathering, in the Marine Corps and the recon battalion. And also, I got out and then I went into the Army and I served the same role as scout sniper there. And I had a bad motorcycle accident, so I had to go into S2, which is a brigade intelligence. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have gone to the field with that 90-pound ruck about back anymore. And I had to get a top-secret clearance. Now, if I had a background like that, I wouldn't even be able to get a top-secret clearance in a brigade-level position. And it blows my mind that this guy could climb all the way to director of CIA with that kind of background. That's just baffling to me.
Well, the Douglas Feith, who was the number three guy at the Pentagon when all this was going on, had a law office in Israel, and he got a clearance godfathered for him. He was the number three guy in the Pentagon, and he was the primary source of fake intelligence about Iraq. This guy's still walking around. So I don't get it.
Hello.
Yes, stand by,
okay.
Michelle.
I'm going to go ahead and bail out. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, good, good. Bruce, thank you for calling. We have a second caller, a recent guest on the show, Michelle Stefanik. Join the conversation, Michelle, with Phil Jerome.
Hi, Jim. How are you? And hello, greetings to your guest, Phil. I didn't get Phil's last name.
Giraldi.
Okay, so needless to say, I'm listening to your conversation. And there's, as you know, based on my appearance on your show a couple weeks ago, I have some comments, insights I would like to share, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, you're asking about ways forward and what we can do for ways forward to correct this problem. And as I look at it from the lens, you got to take care of your own house before you go out and take out enemies abroad, correct? So the first recommendation I have is you cannot be at all a dual citizen working within the U.S. government. That means the executive branch. That means Congress. That means law enforcement. And that means the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. If you have...
That's the first thing.
You can't be a dual citizen. That means British, Canadian, Israeli. You cannot. When you take an oath to defend our Constitution, it's only one Constitution. So therefore, if people can't give up their dual citizenships, they can't be in our government structure.
Michelle, the very first political speech I ever gave was at a Ron Paul Freedom Rally held in the grass outside the Capitol on 15 April Tax Day, 2008. I gave a presentation explaining how the whole process had been corrupted by dual citizens and that no dual citizen should ever occupy a decision-making or policy-shaping position within the government. That would subsequently be published as 9/11 and the neocon agenda, because so many of the neocons who were in the Department of Defense were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. So, I mean, I could not agree more. Let me invite Phil, but I'm willing to bet Phil's inclined to agree with us on this point as well. Phil.
Yeah, in fact, that was one of my recommendations for how we can push back. We can push back on congressmen, we can push back on the media, insisting that dual nationals have no role in our government. And I agree, that should be all dual nationals. And the other thing I would add in with that is, based on our previous phone call, was that people should not be granted security clearances by godfatherism. That's been taking place too much, particularly in the Department of Defense, and it's what brought all these neocons into the Department of Defense in the first place. So no security clearances if there are any questions about ultimate loyalty to the United States.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, the other point that I want to raise, and this is going to be a little bit more controversial, but I think, Jim, you'll get where I'm going. I think it should be a treasonous act if... or at least against a law, if you run for any elected office and it's not declared that the official that is running does not or did not declare that they were CIA or an intelligence agency operative. Because if they don't disclose openly before they ran for office, and I mean any elected office, or president, they otherwise are still operating. I would think that would apply for people like maybe Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. And if they are, and they were, and if they are CIA or any intelligence operations, and they did not declare and openly disclose. Now, I find it very interesting. More and more CIA, prior CIA employees, you know, such as we have a congresswoman here in Virginia, and others, the congressman, what's his name, in Texas that now no longer is in office, he opened, declared that he was CIA, a former CIA. Our military declares all the time that they're SEALs or they're, you know, they're Army Rangers like Cotton or Crenshaw. So why... don't you agree that if someone is CIA or of an intelligence operation or intelligence agency, if they don't declare to the American people as they're running or with their election, that they are still lying to the American people and therefore otherwise still operating?
Michelle, thank you. Thank you for the question. Phil, I'm sure you want to field that. I mean, I don't think we ought to assume that every officer of the CIA is working against the American government or doesn't have the best interests of the nation at heart. But we obviously feel there are many, John Brennan being one of the most prominent examples, who really, in my opinion, are working contrary to the interests of the country. Phil, your thoughts.
I know quite a few former CIA officers who have gone into politics or into journalism, that sort of thing. But as far as I know, all of them have declared openly what their background is. I don't know of any that are could be identified as a hidden or someone who. How do you conceal if you work for 20 years for a government agency? I mean, I just don't know of a case where that is actually happening or has happened.
And then I think you agree that we should maybe make sure that Congress enacts a law to make sure that because we wouldn't know, because they may still be deep cover operatives, that the American people need to know and have a right to know if they're going to vote for vote somebody in as an elected official, that they need to know their background. And if that includes being intelligence, they need to be declared, correct?
You got agreement here, and because Phil can only be a few more minutes, we've got a couple other callers standing.
Okay, I have two more quick comments. Then, if anyone in the U.S. government, to include the Congress, the executive branch, and courts, are against making these points that we're stating in law, and they're opposing it, then they have just self-disclosed as to who needs to be investigated and who is not in the right. The right interest of the American people. Now, another point in terms of bin Laden, it is my understanding Karl Rove had direct telephone conversations with Fox News' Roger Ailes regarding the al-Qaeda bin Laden story on 9/11, and that Roger Ailes called directly to Karl Rove when he was in the Bush White House, as well as Dick Cheney, to spread this disinformation. Is that the reason why maybe Fox News is now being flimsy on some of these points?
Michelle, that's getting a little too far off. I want to thank you for calling. I have other callers standing by, as I've explained to you. Paul, please join us. Paul from California, join the conversation.
Okay, thank you once again. Michelle, I'll go you one better. Probably Jim could have seen this coming, but forget about dual citizens. How about no non-whites, that means Jews also, can be in government? If you look now and you see all the racial squabbling and essentially all these government appointments have become sort of a racial spoil system where, oh, you got the Asians saying we need more Asians, and you got the blacks saying we need more blacks, and you got some stupid woman saying, oh, I'm not going to vote for anybody unless they're gay. Or transgender, or whatever. It's just insanity.
Paul.
Yeah.
That's clearly a racist attitude to say only whites can serve in the government. Lots of people.
Of course it is. Because look, it's being used against us.
Paul, you want to take advantage of this opportunity of having this wonderful source here rather than, propagandizing a point of view with which most of us would disagree, okay?
No, if you got a question for Phil. Don't you get it? We're being propagandized.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Have you ever seen a picture of Dr. Seuss, Jim?
We're going to go in a different direction. Scaredy Cat, join
no
the
other
conversation. Scaredy.
Hi, Jim and Phil and Bruce and Michelle and Paul. So my question to Phil is just to extend what you were saying. So the filthy rich corporations, you said to publicize the bad ones. And so can you just mention by name? I know it's probably hard to list the number one worst one, number two worst, the third next worst. But could you mention maybe one or two or three of them that we should know? And also the worst number one, number two, number three congressmen or congresswomen, which I will say I just heard a speech by Rashida Tlaib. I will add her. I am a Muslim lady, and she calls herself Muslim, so I will add her to maybe the worst in the worst top three legislators. And just who is the citizenship czar that I can rely on, in the sense that Phil's idea to go after, very good. Everybody should, American should be loyal to America. Of course, that's true for all of the 200 countries. Every citizen should be loyal to their country. Who is the actual person who is who knows all the legislation and who is the spearhead to shove out, remove the idea of dual citizenship, especially in government positions?
Phil, anything you'd like to add there? Did we lose Phil? Mitchell, did we lose Phil? Are we disconnected from the studio?
No, I don't see us disconnected from the studio.
But is Phil, still with?
I think he dropped.
You think Phil dropped? Okay. Well, Mitchell, I'd love to get your thoughts about this. I thought we had a couple callers who were going off on tangents, but I know we got the break coming up. So if you want to squeeze in a few preliminary thoughts, let's continue a conversation after the break. Preliminary thoughts?
Well, I think Philip's 100% right. However, I look at it as if our government has already been taken over. And we are being treated as if we're the insurgents. You know, the friendly politicians, or I should say the politicians that represent we the people, are treating as if we are the insurgents within our own government and our own government structure. And our politicians are sent there to administer government, not to babysit the people and be our caretaker. And this is essentially, liberal policy has turned into this, you know, cradle to grave caretaking system. There's the breaks coming in.
Okay, we're going to have the break, then we'll continue our conversation, and you're welcome to call in 540-352-4452. Phil had advised me that he might be unable to stay after this break, and indeed he's no longer here. But I am, and I'll be glad to take your calls. We're right after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that our guest, my guest, Phil Giraldi, has been able to rejoin us, that he had a lost signal there. Phil, I'm glad to have you back. I don't know how much you caught of the series of questions that were being raised or comments made, but if there's anything there you'd like to remark upon, you're welcome to do that now. And then we have one caller still with us, Scaredy Cat. We'll come back to her after you reply. Your thoughts.
Hello.
Yeah, Phil, go. Yeah. Any thoughts you have about what you heard before you lost the signal?
I couldn't hear anything she said. I lost the signal immediately when she started speaking.
You're talking about Michelle Stefani?
The very last one.
The very last one. Okay. Well, she is here, Phil. She's still with us. But before we turn to her, did you have any comment on the prior observations? I think you and I both agreed with Michelle Stefanik's primary points about not having dual citizens in decision-making or policy-shaping positions in the government and the desire to declare their background. She did have some further thoughts, but I thought those were the two most important. I'll go ahead and have Scaredy. Scaredy, go ahead now. Phil didn't hear your earlier question, so please do refashion and present it again.
Hi, Phil. Yes. And Jim. So I phrased it as, who is our citizenship czar? You know, a good guy who's working for us. Who do you think is the person who's actually legislating, or just even if it's a journalist, who would know the most about how to improve the dual national situation in the sense of eliminating it? Who is doing the most work? And my other two quickly points were, who, in terms of filthy rich corporations doing harm to humanity, your idea was very good to publicize them. What are the names of the top three, roughly top three, and who are the absolute worst congressmen, worst congresswomen? I am a Muslim woman, so I added Rashida Tlaib because I just heard her crying speech, which is totally crocodile tears. So I would add, list her as maybe the number one worst congresswoman. But who can you name in your estimation, just so we can get a big idea or the overall view, and actually ourselves, once we know the names of the good guys and the bad guys, we can actually ourselves maybe start doing a little bit of work. I'm just a VOP, very ordinary person. So go ahead. Thanks for visiting Jim today.
Yeah. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, well, I certainly would agree Nancy Pelosi is the worst congresswoman. And I probably would Adam Schiff or Chuck Schumer as the worst congressman. But, you know, the whole question of the dual nationality is kind of difficult. I'll tell you why. The problem is Israel is not going to provide a list of American politicians and media types who are dual nationals that hold Israeli citizenship. So you have to find these things out, in other ways. And I would say that people like Steny Hoyer, who certainly would be on my of Maryland, who is congressman, would certainly be on my hit list for investigating because he's been to Israel 27 times. I think you have to, try to figure out how to do it. There's nobody really in the government that is working against in identifying dual nationals and getting them out of government. Nobody. But we should make it an issue. Let's start talking about it. Let's get... let's start writing letters to the editor. Let's start, going on talk shows like this where you can raise the issue. I mean, let's give it a higher profile. I think that would be a good thing.
Good. Scarity Moore.
Yeah.
So another thing, just one. So thank you very much for the answer. A good person. You are a good person, obviously, but I'm just telling, the audience and ourselves, one sign of a good person is he doesn't shy away from the answer and equivocate. You gave direct answers. Just there was a little third part in terms of the worst corporations. And also, I have this idea. I'm just a mom out there in a little house. Well, my husband bought me a big house, so he worked hard. My ear clicks on language. So I think it would really help for us not to talk about places in terms of pseudonyms, like Middle East. There's no such thing as the Middle East. Middle East of what? Outer space? It is Asia. It is a piece of land in Asia. So that's a little bit of a trend I would like to start. People saying West Asia, and not to say use the beautiful, blessed, holy name of Israel. I had heard a Muslim lady, another one, mention that what Israel is. I don't know much about Christianity except just living. I have silver. Prizes on my head, on my hair, just by living. So Israel, she was saying, is just a nickname for Joseph. And the name is stolen and the land is stolen. So why don't we, I try to say stolen Palestine, the land that is the gang of people who have stolen Palestine from the Christians and the Muslims. So things like that. And also instead of saying YouTube, just say YouTube, the corporation whose CEO is Susan Wojcicki. So I think that would really help because YouTube, most people think of it as a friendly thing. You know, you watch nice videos when you were little. If you saw a movie, type into YouTube, you can watch it again. So just talking about aliases and actual names. Go ahead. Sorry, I think I was a little.
No, that's fine, Sherry. Fine. Go ahead, Phil.
I have written an article some time back about the use of euphemisms when dealing with U.S. foreign policy and particularly the Middle East, and in terms of the way the media and the way the politicians in particular refer to certain things. Like, for example, you can't say Israel without at the end of it having the only democracy and our closest friend in the Middle East. It's a required part of the phrase. And that sort of thing. Yeah, I use the expression Middle East because it has a certain meaning for me. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there are probably better ways to describe these places, and there are more honest ways to describe them, and I'm all in favor of that.
Scary? Further thoughts?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Phil. Thank you so much for that. And the thing is that if we, and also I was thinking that, of course, you are very sharp, and that is your profession, to be very sharp, and you've earned a living being very sharp. Again, I'm just a mom, so I do the kitchen tornado, you know, go from the fridge, take the food out, go to the oven, cook it, then, you know, turn to the washing machine, fold, and then go back to the fridge next to me, breakfast, lunch. So the dance of the kitchen. So my mind is mush, has turned to basically oatmeal. But I was thinking, so with all this political analysis, and after all, politics is just people analyze, what is analysis is just looking at things in order to become clear in our own minds what's happening, and then based, if we have a clear idea on what's happening, what action we can do in order to be a good person. What step should I take? Who should I talk to? Where should I walk to or drive to meet whom? And politics, of course, is just which person is making the rules so that another person has to follow. So my point in political analysis is that we really have to go to religion. And even if somebody says, oh, I'm an atheist, but we have to look at the culture of the religion. So if you talk about the most popular religions, that is Christianity, 2.5 billion people, Islam, 2 billion people. I think the next one might be Hinduism, 1.5 billion people. So when people mention, you know, they have a, you know, the standard way of talking, like a boilerplate phrase would be the three great major religions, Christianity, Islam, and they add a third religion, which is not a main religion. It is only 15 million people in humanity, our family of humanity, which includes, of course, those 15 million people. So all people regarded as one human family is 7.5 billion people. So when you think of 7.5 billion, what is it? It's 7.5 thousand million compared to 15 million. So 15 versus 7,500. How many people is that? So if you get a representative average group, that would say be 500 people, 499 persons of those would be Christians, Muslims, Hindus, atheists, local religions, that is, you know, nature religions, such as the First Nations or Africa's religions, Buddhism, if I forgot to say that, and you could even throw in the Sikh religion. That is 499 of us. We are in
Scary.
The human family, thought, philosophy, and religion. Only one, the 500th person, is a Jew or a Jewess. So
yes.
We have Scary. To follow religion. That would add a very important analysis and be able to see things clearly if we added religion into the political debate. Sorry, Jim, I didn't talk too long.
No, that's fine, Scarity. That's just fine. You're suggesting that because the number of Jews is relatively small in terms of the world's population, that referring to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam as the three great religions, they are the three great Abrahamic religions, maybe a bit of a distortion, but useful, beneficial politically. Let me just add, by the way, if you want idiots in government, we have this Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois, and we have this woman from Hawaii who may be the dumbest person ever to serve in Congress, Mazie Hirono. They're both declaring they won't vote for any candidate unless they're a diversity candidate. In other words, they'll discriminate against nominees for federal appointments on the basis of their race, which is against the law. I mean, these people are just dumber than wood. I mean, it's impossibly awful. Scaredy, I want to thank you for all your comments. And Phil can pick up. We do have another caller here I want to bring in. Sal, go ahead. Join the conversation with me and Phil Giraldi.
Hi, gentlemen. I just want to say that with these people in Congress that are, they're pretty much saying that if you're not LGBT or something or other and you're white, then you're bad and we won't vote for you. What can people who are white, by the way, I'm Italian, the government decided to call me white, and I don't have a problem with that. It's just I have a problem being picked on because of the fact that my parents, you know, gave birth to me and I had no issues with that. What can people who are considered white do to push back without being jerks about it?
Phil, do you have thoughts about that? I mean, it's a little bit off of the page, but I, you know, if you're up for commenting, both Scaredy and Sal seem to have concerns about what appears to be an emerging virulent form of racism, anti-white racism. I'd certainly welcome your comments and thoughts about it because it appears to be part of the platform of the Democratic Party today, believe it or not.
Well, yeah, I do have thoughts on it. Probably better not to go public with them these days. I consider Black Lives Matter to be a domestic terrorist group.
Yes.
I don't think there is such a thing as white supremacism or however they are trying to define it. They're talking about traditional Western civilization Christian values whereby people achieve through hard work and by behaving decently. And this is what they're trying to destroy. You know, I am so astonished by this stuff that's happening and all of my peer group, shall we say, that I still stay in pretty good contact with, feel the same way. We feel the country is going down and that the Democratic Party is doing its best to stay in power by creating as many interest groups and victimizing the people who made this country great. That's my feeling.
Phil, those are all very appropriate observations. Now, I have a lot of friends who think that there may be events going on behind the scenes, that the American military may in fact be working to drain the swamp behind the scene, the QAnon phenomenon, which the Democrats are attacking mercilessly, the media mercilessly, as, you know, fake news or propaganda. I'm just wondering your opinion. I mean, we had a phony inauguration. It was pre-recorded that I was watching the clock, and the inauguration was taking place still during the Trump administration. I have a colleague who was watching on different channels. It was being played at different parts at the same time, which would have been impossible had it been live. There was a spectacular fireworks at the end, but no one in Washington saw it. We have a lot of reports that Biden hasn't even been allowed into the White House, that they've been using movie sets. In fact, I, in the wake of the very first debate, observed this didn't appear to be the same guy as the senator from Delaware. He's got a different eyes. James Woods, the actor, was the first to note that. He's got brown eyes, whereas Biden's blue. His ears come down and connect right to his side of his face, whereas Biden's ears curl up, so they have pendant ears. He's got a narrower skull. I also checked out body language, and when Jill was with Joe in the past, she was always just beaming, holding him arm in arm, hand in hand. He always had this shit-eating grin on his face. When I see with a body double, the guy I have taken to be an actor replacement, who's the one who's doing these interviews and signing these executive orders, she was distant from him. She wasn't looking up at him admiringly, not hand in hand, not arm in arm. He didn't have the big smile, even during the inauguration. When the ersatz Biden was being sworn in, Jill, this being the apex of his career, was not looking at him with a glowing, admiring expression, which is preposterous had it been the real guy. Does any of this add up to you?
You know, it's funny, but I live right outside Washington, and so I have a lot of friends who actually were at these events, the inauguration, the January 6th incident at the Capitol, and many other things that have been going down. And they've come to the same conclusions you have. I mean, that there has been massive fraud perpetrated by the media and the establishment, if you want to put it that way, around and concerning all these issues, and God knows where it's going. I wish I knew.
Well, the nation has never seen electoral theft, fraud on a scale like this. Sidney Powell put up an electoral map before all the numbers began to be juggled, and Trump had done virtually a clean sweep all but maybe five states, 410 electoral votes. He even took California and Minnesota, which I myself had been predicting. And then they went to work to revise, you know, with stopping counting the ballot on all these Dominion voting machines. I mean, those machines were designed to steal elections. Phil, I have never been so appalled. And then when the Supreme Court refused to take the Texas lawsuit, which provided a very deft delineation of how Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin had violated their own statutes and protocols for election, when the Supreme Court declined to take it, that was probably the most disappointing moment in my life as a citizen of this nation. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm there. I'm on that page. I feel that there has been a, you know, I hate to use the word conspiracy, because that actually requires a little sitting down and thinking and conniving. I'm not even sure these people are good at that. I think what we're seeing is that there is a core constituency in this country that has a common view of what's good for the rest of us. And it's these people who know instinctively how their group reacts and what its group's priorities are. It's basically pulled together from financial services, from government people of a certain type, and they self-reward as the system goes on. I think these are the people that we have to identify and start calling out, because they are the ones that are doing this to us, and that's my feeling.
Do you have the suspicion I have that Obama is basically with Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice running the Biden administration behind the scenes?
I would broaden that, actually. I would think we still have the ugly hand of the Clintons and also Obama. Obama is younger and more vigorous and is clearly the shall we say, the conduit or the contact point. But I think that I smell Clinton in a lot of this stuff.
Phil, I want to say I really like everything you've done here. Even when we disagreed, I thought you were very, very appropriate in the way you handled it and responded. So I'm just grateful to you for coming on the show today. I'd like, within the few minutes that remain, to give you the opportunity to say whatever you think the American people should understand about the situation we're in, and any advice you might have for us to how to deal with where we are now, in the hope we're not here very much longer and that there are better days ahead.
Well, I mean, most of my writing and everything has been on the American warfare state. And I would say that this is the thing. It was not even discussed in the campaign by either party. And yet this is the thing that is killing us externally as a nation. It's bankrupting us. It's killing our people. It's bringing us no benefit whatsoever as a result. I think we have to start talking more about what Donald Trump, I believe, honestly tried to do, but couldn't, which was to get us out of these foreign engagements that are worthless, and to kind of focus on what we are as a people and what we're doing here. And I think that's what we have to do. And we have to get people, more people like the ones who call in on your show and the people you have on, to start just, you know, hammer on this. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. And that's the only way change is going to come.
Well, Phil, I think that's all terrific, and my admiration for you has only grown. I'm so pleased to have you here today. I regard you as a dedicated American and a patriot who's been doing his best to do the right by the United States, and I regret to say that there are few out there in Washington, D.C. who share that distinction, so I'm very glad to have had this opportunity. I want to encourage everyone to go to my blog and read the article by Phil Giraldi on what to do about Israel. It's simply excellent. And notice how much his inside knowledge as an officer of the CIA corresponds with my collaborative research on a whole range of issues. We didn't get around to JFK, which I would love to talk about, Phil, on another occasion, where I may have done more research on the Kennedy assassination than any of these other controversial events. Americans need to realize that conspiracies are as common as apple pie. All they require is two or more individuals collaborating together to achieve an illegal end. The largest, most widely prosecuted crime in the United States is conspiracy for this, conspiracy for that. So we need to get a handle on it. And remember this, conspiracy theorists are investigating crimes. That's why they want to silence us. Special thanks then to all of our callers, whether they were on short or long, and to Phil Giraldi for being here, and all of you for being here today. We look forward to having you back on Monday. See you then.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.